People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
From days of long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
Tell me, Doctor, where are we going this time? Is this the 50s or 1999?
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time. The Fandom Podcast Network proudly presents the Fandom Flashback.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious...
Well, it's that time again. We are back with Fandom Flashback. We had such an amazing flashback last time as Kevin and Norman took us on a trip through Highlander. Mm-hmm. But this time it's Kyle's turn to take the controls as we're hitting something that is incredibly near and dear to my heart, and that is the classic anime show Robotech. But I can't do it alone. That's a lot of information, and my brain would go on to protoculture overload if I tried to take it on myself.
Sweet.
So I've got Kevin here. I've got Norman here. And I'm being bold. I've got Alan R. Ryan all the way from Australia joining us for the first part of this episode. So welcome, fellas. I hope you're ready to talk a little mecha, a little protoculture, and some really good music.
Woohoo!
Pinboy's Perrier system ready.
Get out, Amade Gallon.
I'm in love with Miria.
Who isn't in love with Maria?
It's the green hair, isn't it?
Oh, totally.
Oh, come on. Lisa Hayes all the way, boys.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you on that, Adam. That's...
Claudia gets no love. It's not fair.
Yeah, but Lisa's a MILF.
Yeah, well, okay. And Minmay. No one talks Minmay because she's annoying.
Yes.
Right? She's sweet, but yeah, she's annoying.
Yes. Yeah. So I guess I'll start with myself and the first time I saw Robotech. And this is living while I was living in the frozen wasteland known as Hoth or Fairbanks, Alaska at the time. Going into my local VHS store and finding the original Family Home Entertainment tapes of Robotech, where they so generously put one episode per VHS tape.
Now, keep in mind, this is when you would see the VHS tape and you would see that white cylinder inside instead of like an hour or 2.5 hours of tape. And you just saw that very thin amount of tape around the VHS, knowing it was only like 20 minutes long.
Oh, so that's what FHE stood for?
Yeah.
All this time?
Oh, all the VHS heads out there are laughing. They know.
Yeah. I know.
So for me, I had always been, I started off with anime with Force 5, where they took five different classic Japanese animations and brought them to America, Americanized them totally. But hey, all I know is I was a kid and there was giant robots on my TV. Mm-hmm. That's all I needed to know.
Hey, can I ask you what time this was when you discovered, like what year it was, excuse me, when you discovered these VHS tapes?
I want to say that was 80. Late 85, early 86.
Okay.
So
is that when you hit protoculture?
A little before that, but yeah.
Okay.
But I remember just watching the first episode of Robotech, which we all love the name of Booby Trap.
Right.
And just going, I've never seen anything like this before. The designs of the anime, the feel of the story, and the weight it carried, and the fact you had so many diverse characters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what it is? For me, it's a little bit like Star Wars. It's it personalized the mecha story, and I think that's what makes it different from Transformers and many other, like Gundam and stuff like that, is that straight away you're drawn into a hero's journey, which is mortal. I mean, we're talking about, you know, people actually die in this series. That's what made it, just like Star Wars, it made it a reality.
Oh, no, I completely agree, Alan. And for me, too, what at the time of seeing it, not really understanding the full history of what Robotech was, and then once I found out that history, appreciating it even more, because Robotech to this day, and guys, you can chime in on this, I think it's one of the more ambitious American anime projects ever undertaken. To take three totally different series and combine them into this one overachieving arc that literally, in the storyline, spanned generations of characters.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing, like when I got into it, and it was around that same time, I think a lot of people were getting into this block of TV, at least where I lived, and I was in Ohio at the time, Northeast Ohio. So you had this block of shows. You ran out, you know, from school, and you had Robotech, Star Blazers, and Battle of the Planets, like back to back to back. It was like the best block of TV ever. But it was hard sometimes to try and get in, like when you were younger, to try and really get involved in the moral aspect of the story. So I think when we were all younger, we loved the fact that these, you know, basically the Veritech fighters could transform and they could hold people in their hands and they can fight giants and trotties and stuff like that. But I think as you got along with it, it became more of a moral lesson, because Robotech is deep. I mean, it really is. It is a deep, epic story.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on the story, Norm, because just a quick history. I picked up on it on television when it was airing, and I remember the Battle of the Planets. They had kind of a rotation thing going on in Southern California where I was watching this. You know, this is where they had the Inspector Gadgets, the Thundercats, the G.I. Joes. And the thing that I found interesting about Robotech was I was getting really involved with more of the story and the interaction between the characters. And to me, the giant robots and the Robotech cult, you know, the protoculture and the mech warriors, whatever, was kind of a secondary thing for me. And if you think about it, the reason why Robotech works is not just because of the look of it and, of course, the planes that turn into robots and the gigantic aliens. It's really it's a soap opera. And that's why soap operas are so popular, is because you get invested in characters. Whether you tease, you know, these type of shows that are on during the daytime, they're still very popular, and this had not been done before with any type of children's cartoon before. And I started rooting for certain people, and you know, started booing certain characters, and I had an infatuation with Myria, and I loved the fact that this alien got married to a human and ended up having a family. And this just kept going on even after the Macross saga. You had Masters and you had the Next Generation after that. And I think that gets overlooked a lot with this series. And that's one of the things to me that I absolutely enjoy, because I am so invested in these relationships.
No, I think that was a very strong part of Robotech. And one of the other things for me with Robotech, especially in the Macross saga, is it's the first show I can remember getting invested into characters and then they die. And I remember when Roy Fokker died, I was like, what just happened?
Yeah. Hey, Alan,
spoiler alert.
Yeah,
Alan,
right?
Alan, what about you? Where did you discover Robotech and how did it affect you?
We first saw it here in Australia in about probably 83, I think, was when it finally got out. You got to remember, in Australia, we got things probably about a year after you got it in the States. And that's not just TV, that's merchandise, that's everything.
Well, I want to say you probably got it before us, because the air for us over here, I think, was closer to 85. Yeah, so that's what I remember, because I don't know. What do you think, Norm? Russ, we'll get back to you, Alan, real quick. Norm, do you remember when it came out for you in Ohio?
No, not really. That all becomes kind of like a blur to me, because I too was hitting protoculture around the same time.
Yeah, I would. Exactly. Anyway, go ahead.
It was released in the U.S. originally in 1985.
Okay.
In the U.S.
In the U.S.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Alan. Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
So we basically had a TV show out here called Boris's Breakfast Club, which is about this guy that was I suppose a little bit like Space Ghost. He was a character who would introduce, whether it was Robotech or whether it was He-Man and any of that sort of era, or Mask. And it was a show just before we went to school each morning. So when we first saw it, we just thought it was an extension of Transformers at the time, because we really didn't know what it was. And when it finally hit strong, I think it must have been halfway through the I think it was when the character of Minmay and Kyle were starting to get together, and that really, oh my God, hey, hang on, this is about people. It's not just about robots. And that's what dragged me in. But I think for me, the biggest thing was hearing these voice actors, which I've just got a little bit here to go through to a big shout out to these guys, because they're huge heroes of mine. Frank Catalano, who you all know very well as Rand, and many other characters. Richard Epcar, of course, who played Ben Dixon, Grell, Lunk, and had many Zentradi officers as well. He played Eddie Frierson, he played Kyle, Barbara Goodson, of course. I mean, you know, Stephen Kramer, again, another amazing voice actor. Now, what's great about all these guys is and girls is that, or even Cam Clark, who played Max Sterling as well, better known probably out there as Leonardo in the Turtles, and Tony Oller, of course, with Rick Hunter. But what's great about these amazing actors, I don't really class them as voice actors. I can't class them as actors because they really made these characters into a performance more than just a voice. And that's what made this series such an amazing and cinematic series in comparison to any other cartoon that's out there. And I think one of the key things is that we got to know them through other series where they probably weren't given the opportunity to develop a full hero's journey for each character. And I think, you know, hats off to these guys. I mean, they really, really developed it, along with, of course, the amazing team behind the series. Carl Masek included putting this all together as anime's George Lucas.
Yeah. You can't talk Robotech without bringing up Carl Masek, and he can be here, at least here in the States, Alan. He's very much a hot button topic for you either love him or he drives you nuts. Because but without Carl Masek, we don't have anime in the States like we do have today. Mm-hmm.
Okay, can I interrupt there for a second? Because for some of us, like Kevin and I, we were talking about this earlier. We're not as steeped into anime as the two of you, so. Why would you say that? Why is there that this controversy about Carl Masek?
It's all about purity of anime. Basically, there's a lot of people out there that didn't like the fact that Robotech came from three separate animes made by Tatsunoko Productions and then souped together into this bigger, larger saga. And I think that's one of the key issues, is that they are all lovers of the original. So it's very much like the Star Wars community, or maybe even the Star Trek fan community, where purists are so into the original that they don't want to see any derivative of it or any adaptation, if you like.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, it does. So that's why I say he's considered like a George Lucas. You know, it's very hot and cold with fans. I think he was one of the smartest guys. And from what my dear friend Richard Epcar has told me of him, and go back to the original history and the original idea of what he was trying to do with that series and with others that he's done very similar with, is that Carl was a very high-energy guy, somebody that really knew story well. And a lot of people don't know, he worked on the original Star Wars.
I did not know that, no. Wow. So you have... You have the original, and you have the originals, so distribution rights with, what, Tatsunoko, and then Harmony Gold got the distribution rights for the United States. Is that where Carl Masek comes into play? Because I really don't know a lot of these facts.
Yeah, when you're talking Harmony Gold, Carl Masek worked with Harmony Gold to get this project launched, and we're going to get into this in another episode of the Flashback later on, because I'm sure Alan is very aware, too. The Robotech license, and because of Macross and just how the licensing works, it's one of the most complicated anime licenses in history. And especially here in the States, it is one large headache for anime fans. Mm-hmm. Because of how the Robotech license is structured, it is a lot of the reason why we haven't seen many of the other Macross series come to the States. There's other reasons for that, but the Harmony Gold licensing is one of the key issues with that. But when you talk about Carl Masek, because you also talk, at least here in the U.S., you can't talk about him. Obviously, you don't have Robotech without him. But he also was one of the founders of Streamline Pictures. And even if you're just a casual anime fan, I promise you, you've seen something from Streamline Pictures if you're any kind of sci-fi fan. from, because that was what was available in your Blockbuster Video or your local rental down the street store for a lot of the late 80s, early 90s. And again, what Carl Masick did was he just felt like he needed to more Americanize the scripts for anime. So again, you're talking about traditionalists versus trying to make this more Americanized and more popular in America.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So when you take a look at, because I've seen movies with the original Japanese dialogue, and then you have the adapted Japanese dialogue with the voiceovers and the dubbing. And you guys are huge fans of the voice actors. But when you watch this, is the Japanese version available, and does it translate just as well, or is it more powerful because something gets lost in translation?
This is what I'll say, and Alan, you can chime in on this too.
When you're
talking Macross,
Go
ahead, Alan.
Yeah.
No, what I was going to say is when you're talking Macross, both in the translation of Robotech and in the original Macross version, which is available in the States or has been at different times, the powerful message is still there. I think you have a lot more changes in the other two parts of Robotech versus the originals. And I think for me, the other two parts of Robotech are more powerful because of the full tie-in, because I think the original material from there just wasn't as good a show as Macross was.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan, I don't know. What is your feeling on that? Did we lose Alan?
Yeah, we may have lost him.
Well, forgive us. International strikes again.
We'll get him back on in a moment here. There he is.
I am actually somebody that really enjoys the original versions just as much. And
Hello.
Yeah. You're cutting
in and
out.
I can hear you guys, but I don't know if you can hear me.
We're on a pretty decent time delay with him, so he'll catch up in a second.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
All right, go ahead.
Hello, there we go. That should be a bit clearer. So one of the things I think about Robotech is that straight up is the fact that, yeah, it comes from three separate anime which had their own distinct stories. And these are stories that aren't ones that you would consider syncable, if you like. That means that they can go together and link. And Carl was able to really, I think, take lessons he'd learned from George and bring those stories together in a coherent human story. I mean, it's about aliens. Yes, it's about, the galactic struggle for protoculture. But really, when it comes down to it, it's really about us. And like Kevin, you mentioned, it's a soap opera to a certain extent. So, you know, all those things come into it, but I don't think they're quite as, big when it comes to the fact that a human struggle is always one that is going to be relatable. But the stories that you're going to find in the original Japanese anime can be seen a little bit differently. Macross is probably the most literal translation to a certain point, but when we start moving into Southern Cross and Mespeda, they are quite different.
Yeah. Now, for me, I mean, I think if you talk to most Robotech fans, the Macross saga is the standout of Robotech. I think Southern Cross, and Alan, let me know what you think on this. I think Southern Cross is probably the hardest one to adapt into Robotech because the Southern Cross story is just so bizarre.
Mm-hmm. It is. And the fact that, we're talking about going from, a completely different planet. I mean, where it is not set up to be set within, I suppose, human parameters, if you like. This is a very alien world. So the way that plays out is not really one that would be a natural fit for Robotech, particularly with the enemy. The Robotech Masters adaptation into Robotech worked. And the cloning idea, which was huge in that part of the storyline, worked for what it is. But I think that's the key, is that it's not going to work in any other form.
Was Southern Cross Robotech Masters? In the U.S.?
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's the one that's the one with Dana Sterling, right?
And the hover tanks, bro.
Right. Okay, so I'm just for people who are still catching up. So you had Southern Cross was Robotech Masters, and then Mespeda was the Invid Invasion.
Yeah, the new generation. Yeah.
The next generation, yeah.
Okay, so go ahead.
So I think that's the key, is that, each one linked so well because it was all animated by the same team, so Tatsunoko. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it works together
in a sort of, I suppose, art direction case. But the stories are so different, that how Carl was able to link those together in a way that was feasible for us to see as a story, I think is why we've been, I suppose, so sought after for a sequel, because with sequels, it's never going to work quite as well when you've got such stories that are so widespread.
Yeah, and for me, when we move on from Southern Cross and talking about New Generation Mos Better, you're talking about, to me, one of my all-time favorite mech designs, and that's the Cyclone.
Oh, hell yeah. Sorry.
That's the motorcycle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Mos Better was a lot easier to adapt into Robotech because of the mech designs, and you had this alien invasion with the Invid. And again, this goes back to Carl and just the amazing job he did of linking these shows together to make this one large overarching story. And I think one of the biggest shames to come out of Robotech was Carl had so much more vision for it, and because of so much legal mess and financial situations, he never really got to fully develop his entire vision for Robotech. And I think that's, we've been robbed of something there.
Can you expound on that a little bit? What does that mean? Like, what was his vision for Robotech?
His vision was to have this continuing saga. And that's when we start talking about Robotech 2, The Sentinels, which was completely...
And the novels.
What was that, Alan?
And, of course, Robotech Sentinels novel series and Odyssey, which really set up how he was expanding this further with a very well-known Star Wars author, which got us there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But what I'm going back to is always he started to do the Sentinels as an anime. And if you ever have seen the Sentinels movie, that they basically, I believe they had about 4 to 5 episodes done when it just, the licensing messes started, Harmony Gold kind of backed out. And what they ended up doing was creating a Robotech 2, The Sentinels movie, splicing together what they had done to make one movie. And you can see the difference in animation styles, how the characters look different. And it was the start of something very interesting, and the novels are outstanding, and I'll tell anybody to go read the novels. It's just a shame we didn't get to see that on our television screens as well.
Now, with these novels, are they in, like, are they printed form, or are these manga?
No, these are printed novels.
Okay.
So, and Alan, you want to expand a little bit on the novels?
Well, it goes back to, Palladium. I think, without going too far into the novels, because I think that's a whole conversation in itself, as that's sort of a story, I suppose, a little bit like the Star Wars Expanded Universe. It's a canon to itself to some extent. But, it is about the continuing saga. For me, it goes back to, Kevin Sambida and what he did with the great Palladium Books RPGs. That's what really sort of grew, I suppose, this expansion of my fandom into Robotech itself. We spent all of our high school, Brad Macker and I and our sort of RPG group, every afternoon at the high school playing 2 hours of Robotech. So we played every single saga. We played Macross, Southern Cross, or New Generation. We looked at the idea of the Invid as one that was constantly moving forward. And so for us, we actually got into a lot of the novel storylines and where Sentinels was going to take Rick Hunter and Max Sterling and the rest of the teams, and onto, of course, Robotech, into the new Shadow Chronicles era, which is kind of stalled now, I suppose, with the Haydonites as an enemy and a very famous Jedi Master in there.
Yeah, and coming up on later episode of Flashback, we're going to get with Alan. We're going to go really in-depth on the RPG and the novels, so you can look forward to that. And I know you're chomping at the bit for that to happen, Alan.
Without a doubt. I used to actually run a podcast called Jogcast Radio Network, and we actually did, for about 18 months, cover Robotech as a regular weekly podcast. So going back over it is nothing but fond memories.
By the way, I just wanted to mention for the listeners that didn't catch the clue that Alan left there regarding the Jedi Master in Robotech Shadow Chronicles. He's referring to Mark Hamill as one of the voices, and also Chase Masterson from Deep Space Nine.
Oh, I didn't know that. Very cool. Yeah.
Oh, dropping the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where this is where, again, I think the history of Robotech of trying to get it back on television or through a DVD format. And so it's almost a little sad because we did have Shadow Chronicles come out, which is over 10 years ago now, which is just mind-blowing to me, where they tried to use that as a launch to either get another series or at least some more DVD movies out. And it's just petered out. And again, it's getting bogged down in license rights and costs. And it just makes me sad to think we have this amazing property and they just can't seem to get it all on the same page to get more out to the fans, because if you put Robotech on something, the fans eat it up like it's candy.
I completely agree. And I think there's a certain age range for a lot of the fans out there that grew up with Robotech that really know it almost iconically through the silhouette of the SDF-1. I think that when you show the SDF-1 in any form, most people that know at least a general knowledge of anime will say, like, I know that. I mean, they probably won't, and maybe the Cyclone, but you got to admit the SDF-1 is one of the most iconic shapes, at least in anime.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you're talking about not only the SDF-1, but the Transforming Valkyrie is probably still to this day one of the most recognizable transforming vehicles in history.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, another thing with Robotech and with its story arcs was, you go back, especially at that time, and think about some of the things you saw happen in Robotech. I mean, we talk about it. You had an interracial relationship that was no big deal between mm-hmm. Claudia and Roy Fokker. You had an Earthman marrying an alien. And in a way, you almost had reference to almost an incestuous relationship between Min-Mei and Lin Kyle, who were cousins, but it just seemed like, okay, at least for Lin Kyle, there was supposed to be, he was wanting a little more than that, which at the time you're going, that's really creepy, until you understand the Japanese culture later in life.
Oh, right. It kind of softened us up for Game of Thrones, so that's all cool.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, it was just prequel to the Lannisters. But, guys, I think one of the things, too, that when we're talking Robotech, you have got to talk about the music in Robotech. And
yeah.
How big that was to that show.
Well, because you're talking about this. Every 30-minute episode was really a pocket drama. And there's just so much. I guess the one thing that I really remember most about watching it the first time around is, and this is probably true for everybody, is how much emotional content is in an actual episode. Whether you're like laughing a lot with some of the comedy that was going on. But most of the time, I remember that, you know, when Roy sat down and played his guitar and Claudia's like, you know, what's wrong? You know, you didn't think that was anything was going on because you didn't see how badly he was hurt. And then all of a sudden he slumped over and there was like, I know there was a swell of music in there and it was just intense. I mean, there was a lot of intensity in the music, and that's what really, I think, grounds the show probably more than most.
Yeah, and then you talk about the fact that you had all these original music numbers. I mean, literally vocal music being sung in this show, which I can't think of any show at that time that even, especially for an animated show, had that.
And not only that, you had the actual music itself used as a weapon and a diversion against the Zentradi.
Yeah, and I think that was also one of the more interesting aspects of it was the use of popular culture and culture, and how much that affected these warlike aliens who were coming to our planet, and how they used culture to end up becoming this power source and this just all powerful thing throughout the entire series of Robotech.
It was almost as if that culture was a prototype of culture. I'm just, you know, maybe that's what it's like. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah. I think another thing for me when I look back at Robotech and I look at where it has a place for me was Robotech was the ultimate anime gateway drug. Because with it being kind of more of a Saturday, felt like a Saturday morning cartoon or weekday afternoon cartoon. And at that time, people really not being in the know in anime, but seeing this style being done, you add that with like Battle of the Planets and Voltron. As people got older, I think and they could see Robotech in a different light, it expanded, made them want to expand into more anime and investigate more anime. So I think it really was almost like a gateway drug to bring people into other anime.
That's exactly what happened to me. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was watching this TV show and this Robotech show and talking about it with my friends at school. And then this movie called Akira came out. Like, oh, it's kind of like that. It's anime. And then we were all blown away by that. So you're absolutely right. It was definitely a gateway anime truck.
Well, I mean, when you're trying to like, you're comparing like what was going on with like U.S. animation at the time, and you had your Looney Tunes and you had a lot of, I don't want to cheapen what was going on with U.S. animation at the time, but Japanese animation was a far cut above. Because I really do think that they were focusing more on the stories. And I got into it with Star Blazers. My friend got me into it with Star Blazers because seriously, like the Yamato and the wave motion gun, it really doesn't really get that much better. But that just leads you into, it springboards you into one over another over another. Then you start, it's either Star Blazers into Battle of the Planets or into Robotech or vice versa or somewhere in between. But when that wave of imports started happening in the mid-80s, it really changed the landscape, I think, for a lot of people. I think they really just were like, you know what? This isn't just Saturday morning TV. This is something really special.
Yeah. And what I find so amazing about it is you even look, there's a point in the late 80s or early 90s where anime was kind of really gone back to underground. People weren't paying that much attention to it. And it was another series that, you know, for some people, it brought back Robotech memories or people knew who knew Macross. But when a new anime company, Manga Entertainment, came out, one of their first titles was Macross Plus. And that show was one of the, probably with a lot of people, because they're one of the five shows that really kind of launched the 90s anime movement.
Yeah, that Ninja Scroll, I think, was another one.
Yeah, Wrecking Lotus War.
Lotus, yeah.
But, Vampire Hunter D.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you guys remember Lensman?
Oh, yes. I own Lensman.
Great one.
Love Lensman.
Do you know the history?
No.
Lensman goes all the way back to the Docky Smith novels, which, of course, George the man himself, big old GL, went, that's a good idea. I might steal that.
And of course, yeah. That's
it's
right.
A very Star Wars type like story. It's very
similar. And as somebody that you all know, all three of you know very, very well, also went, that's a good idea too. And then went and made Babylon 5.
Yep, that's right. J. Michael Straczynski is a huge Lensman fan, as well as a Lord of the Rings
really?
Fan.
That is cool. I didn't know that.
I own a couple of collected editions of those novels, and they are some good stuff.
That's right. That's right. You're right, Alan. It's interesting. It's just interesting that you're seeing these as commodities now, you know, when you get a little bit older. And they were kind of like hodgepodgey until like the manga license or that manga brand really kind of punched a hole in, especially at home video, like, you know, your Suncoasts and your Video This or your Blockbuster Video, because before they were more like underground and you were getting bootlegs, you know, from your local comic book store or, you know, a friend in high school when you guys were, you know, we were trying to pipe in like VHS machines and hit the play on one and hit the record on the other one and try and get those, you know, underground bootleg copies. But I just remember when the manga brand came out, it really solidified animation, at least at the commercial level in the United States. Do you guys agree with that?
I agree.
Yeah, I would agree. Manga was huge. And the one company that kind of at least initially kind of hooked onto the manga marketing strategy and started doing for themselves too was Central Park Media, who did release Record of Lotus War and had been around for a little bit and had a lot of like cult titles, but they kind of redid their marketing, and they have still to this day, if you look them up on YouTube, Central Park Media opening trailers before their shows, some of the best things put together as far as just entertainment and taking some great musical pieces from some of their anime and creating these great openings of advertising their product. But it's just so funny because it still makes it come around to Robotech again, because another anime company that kind of spawned a little bit after manga was 80 Vision.
Mm-hmm.
And 80 yeah. Vision acquired the Robotech distribution license in the 90s. But 80 Vision also did something very interesting with the Macross license at the same time. They were able to somehow procure the original Macross license. And not only did they redo the voice acting for the original Macross series using the original scripts, but they brought back the original voice actress for Lin-Manuel, who at this time now spoke English very well. And she actually did the voice acting for Min-Mei in the dub of Macross that ADV did in the 90s.
So they took the original footage and then redubbed it?
Yes, they took the original footage, redubbed it with all the original names, the original scripts. So it's the original Macross show, but a totally new dub.
That's interesting, because sometimes you get like the great true performance, you know, when you record it originally. Was there any loss in translation there? Was there any kind of like fan crying foul movement out there? Because you're like, you know, that wasn't, it's kind of like listening to music, knowing that when someone else covers that song, you're like, that's not the original intent of the song that I know.
There's always dissent, no matter where you go. And of course, that did come out with a bit of that. And I think that's the problem with a lot of these, you know, they get so stuck with, I suppose, the original audio teams, or the original, you know, teams behind the scenes, that, you know, that's what you're accustomed to. That's what you're used to when it comes to any of those dubs. And I think, you know, I'm the same when it came to, I suppose, the new Ghost in the Shell, when Richard wasn't a part of it. You know, that when you hear a character like Batow, for example, you know, same with his Ben Dixon, if it was voiced by somebody else, yeah, it kind of puts you out of the works for the first, 10 seconds or so. But once you get past that, you realize, you know, it's somebody else having their chance. Because I always give other audio teams a chance and listen to their work as well. They're all creative artists.
Yeah, though I don't know. I'm with you. I gave the new voice actor doing Bateau a little bit of ground, but Richard's always going to be Bateau.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agree.
And I did notice on his Facebook the other day that he's been doing some voice work as Bateau recently.
Correct. And there's that new Ghost in the Shell video game coming out very, very soon, where all of the original Gits cast from Standalone Complex are back.
Yeah, that makes me extremely happy, because Standalone Complex was just, I mean, anything Ghost in the Shell is amazing, but especially that first season of Standalone Complex with the Laughing Man. It's just all-time classic.
Without a doubt. Now, boys, I have a bit of a challenge for you. Now, this is a challenge we do over here at OzFans Radio, but I think it might just be a little bit of fun with Robotech. And it's a game we call Connery or Kane. I'm sure Norman will be right in this one.
So I'm going to give you... Norman's waving his hand right now. He wants in hard on this.
Oh, cool. So I'm going to basically go through it. Usually we pick different movies, but we're going to pick just Robotech. I'm going to say a character, and you have a choice in Connery or Kane, and doing an impression with one of their lines. So first character is this, Max Sterling, Connery or Kane?
I think Max would lean more towards Kane.
Yeah, actually, yeah, he probably would actually. He'd be a bit more Cockney, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think so. There's a little bit of like a hidden kind of mischievousness in Max, especially when he was squaring off against Miria, you know, when they were flying the video game Veritex against each other.
Well, I
love that scene.
Yeah, some of the best animated scenes in that entire show are Max Sterling in battle.
Yeah, because he was kind of like, you didn't really think anything. I mean, he wasn't really like the hero. And he ended up being so much more heroic and so much more flamboyant and so much more suave than anyone ever gave him credit for, especially when Miria came into the picture.
Definitely. Now, Kyle. Here's one for you. Ben Dixon, Connery or Kane?
Ooh, that's tough. I think I'd have to go Kane.
Yeah.
I would have gone Connery.
I think with Ben Dixon, with the innocence involved there and kind of always just kind of being straightforward, a little bit more Michael Caine.
That's probably right, actually. When you think about it, and Kane would be maybe a little bit more affable like Ben Dixon is, whereas Sean would be, you know, a draw a line in the sand sort of guy and, you know, stand firm.
Yeah. But I see Dixon. Dixon's always laughing and joking and stuff, and I could totally see Connery rolling with that. Just, I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority there, but that's what came to my head.
And the next one, Kevin. Here's a good one. This is have a bad guy for once. Chiron.
Chiron.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. And you have to share. You must share a line.
Ah, gosh. I'm trying to remember a line off the top of my head. It's been a while. I know Protoculture has to be in the line somewhere, but I'm gonna go with Connery on that. And I'm gonna let my cohort sub in for me. Norm, I want you to do your best Connery as Chiron.
I have no memory of like any of these lines. I just
make one up and throw in Protoculture. You'll be
fine. Protoculture.
No, who I can't remember who was his advisor's name.
Britai.
It was Britai. So it was Chiron and Britai. Because I think Britai would be Kane. Those two are, that's Connery and Kane, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but who's that? But wait a minute, which one is Exidor?
Oh.
Oh.
Maybe that's who I'm thinking of, Exidor. Gosh, that's tough. Yeah.
Yes, of course.
So it's because Chiron is like, you know, why are these humans always kicking our ass across the galaxy?
That's it. That's what I wanted.
Who is that fighter? Who is the one that can't best my own best pilot?
Come on, actually, do what's going on here, yeah?
Yeah. So I'll put that one in a plane, and I don't understand why she's not doing it correctly.
Okay, here's an easy one. I'll throw this one at you, Alan. Roy Fokker.
Oh, come on.
Oh, that's easy. Oh, that's Connery.
Yeah, all the way.
Yeah.
Now, Rick, make sure you're getting the Veritech VF1S. Make sure you have your picture clenched. Point it.
I think he's Connery just for the sideburns alone. It's like, Claudia, bring me a martini. And don't worry about the holes in my back. I'll plug them up later.
Yeah, but which Bond girl is Lisa?
Oh, Halle Berry. Mm.
Well, Halle Berry is Claudia, without a doubt. I'm sorry, Claudia,
man. Yeah.
I think that Lisa is Dr. Holly Goodhead. Oh, that's right. I went Moonraker on you guys. That's right.
Whoa,
I
got Twisty Galore. Yes.
Twisty Galore. Yes.
Hey, well, I got a question for you guys. When, you know, for me, the longest time, the only Robotech that existed was the original, Americanized television series with the Macross Saga, followed by Masters, and then the Next Generation. Mm-hmm. When I talk to people about like which one is your favorite, everyone mostly says that Macross Saga across the board is everyone's favorite. The debate really gets into the next two. For me personally, I was never a huge fan of the Masters. I'm not sure exactly what it was. Also, too, Dana's hairstyle just bugged the hell out of me. But I really got into the Next Generation because it was kind of like this roving band of survivors. And plus, of course, you had those awesome motorcycles and the invasion and all that. And it was just kind of a, you know, to me, it was kind of like, you know, a Walking Dead type of group of people just trying to survive, and they had to keep moving. And I actually stopped watching Masters for the longest time. And I would, you know, after I'd go through the Macross Saga, I would skip Masters completely and just go straight into the Next Generation. Where do you guys stand on that? Kyle, you go.
Well, for me, I will be the first to say Southern Cross / Masters is probably my least favorite of the three. I think, like Alan said, I think of the three shows, it was the hardest to incorporate because it really was the one that did not take place on Earth in the original show. And there was so much more alien to it in the original version of the show. And I think they were trying to the only real way that they were able to connect it was using the Dana Sterling character, Because if you actually watch the first episode of Masters, it's basically an entire flashback episode to just establish the history.
What about you, Norm?
I don't think that Masters got a lot of rotation on TV when I was growing up. I think that's why I don't even really remember it all that much. And maybe it's just because it didn't really have, I don't know, like a lot of marketability in the toy lines. I don't know, because when I went to the toy stores, it was always the Veritech Fighters and the Cyclone. I mean, that was like right next to each other. So I just don't really remember watching it a lot. Or maybe like by the time that Masters came out, I was already moving on to other things, you know, like Voltron, because basically it's Five Lions versus Dana's hair. I'm thinking Five Lions, right? No, I, in all honesty, I just don't really remember it that well, because when we were growing up, you know, home video didn't really take shape until maybe another 5 or 6 years down the line, especially when manga, you know, they kind of broke through, as we were talking earlier. So I was pretty much dependent on TV and trying to tape. That's right, listeners, tape. It's called magnetic tape recording these episodes when they came out. Either that or I just didn't see them at all until, you know, if I found a bootleg or whatever, which cost an exorbitant amount of money coming, you know, from wherever, Japan, Singapore, you know, into your local comic store. So I don't really, I'd have to watch it again, really, honestly, to even remember any of the storyline.
Yeah, I think you're right about the rotation, because Macross was, you know, it was wrapping around. When they finish it, it seems like Masters wasn't really getting the love, and maybe that's there was a reason for that. What about you, Alan? How do you feel about the three stories there? Which one is your favorite and least favorite?
Well, look, I think one of the big things about the series is that I see it as one series, and it's a little bit like, in the words of Sean himself, if you look back at the Bonds, there's a sort of a parallel. Is that all of the Bonds are ones that go together, one complete story for all eternity. But I mean, that's basically what I see it as, is basically one huge series that, you know, I mean, Rick is the through line, always has been. And for me, that's why it relates so well as one complete. I mean, you get little bits here and there in Southern Cross, for example, of none other than Rick and where he's going with Max Sterling and the rest of the teams and Sentinels. But it's only just vaguely touched on. And I think that's the thing, is the mystery of that kept me going through that series. But then the Hover Tank came out and just, well, I mean, that's why it's the best mecha, because, I mean, if you played the game, for example, it can literally block anything with those arm shields. It's literally a juggernaut. It's just unbelievable. And that with the Ajax became probably my favorite mecha in the entire series. Character-wise, it's probably not as strong, but to me, it was also the one that actually got me going. But by the time we got to Invid Invasion, I realized that it's all one complete arc and story, and it feeds off each other. And I think that's why, for me, it's one story.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense, and I agree with that. I think, for me, that's the big thing. It's just one amazing overarching story when you look at it. There's so many people who just think Robotech and think Macross, and that's it. And it's a shame, because, the story itself, to have the ambition that they had to tell this space opera, basically, it was just amazing. And I can honestly say, at least animation-wise, I don't think we've seen anything on TV that even remotely comes close to it since.
You know, that's actually a really good point, because I was watching the new Netflix version of Voltron, and I'm not going to take anything away from the stylization of what they're doing there, but I still have yet to see animation quality as good as the late 80s animation. I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff out there, but anything that they put on TV, they just had, it had better shading, better lighting, better angles, better drama. I don't know. Do you guys agree with me or not?
Oh, totally. I agree. Yeah.
I think one of the big things, especially when you're talking about space and mecha shows now versus then, is the fact that we've lost there's so many animators that have lost the ability to do traditional hand-drawn animation. And especially with mecha and space shows, there's so much CGI now. I mean, and you bring up the new Voltron as an example. I thoroughly enjoyed that, but again, I'm not knocking it, but look how much of that was CG comparatively.
Right, right.
Agreed, yeah.
But, you know, it's just Robotech was such an amazing thing and so unique, and it spun out so much, and we're going to cover that, a lot more of that, in the history, especially of the licensing and things like that, in the Phantom Flashback. Alan's going to come back. We're going to have a great show talking about the RPG, the novels, some of the spin-out things. But one of the little things, while I got all of you here before, I know Alan has to go with that international time difference, but the toys. Because the Robotech toys, I don't know about you guys, but they were some of the harder toys to find in stores.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were. Well, and if you did, they were really expensive.
Yeah, they weren't cheap.
No, and they were kind of an odd size.
I mean, now you were dealing with huge juggernaut licenses on the rack at the time. You're dealing with Kenner. You're dealing with Hasbro. You're dealing with some pretty large licenses. So, you know, I live in the world of retail, and what are you going to slot for $39.95, $47.99? That's this, you know, 12 to 18 inch action figure, you know, that's made out of a lot of die cast metal. Am I going to sell one of those in a rotation, or am I going to sell a ton of Kenner Star Wars figures in a rotation? That's pretty much why. You can't really get a lot of distribution when you only have maybe one or two turns a month at best for one toy, when you're taking up anywhere between 8 to 12 inches of vertical shelf space for a brand that no one really knows.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the toys for Robotech, you have to get into what is still one of the bigger toy controversies out there, and that's when the Transformers Jetfire figure came out.
Yeah, because that was the heavy Valkyrie. That was the heavy fighter, right?
Yeah, that was basically the heavy Veritech fighter.
Right. Can you give a history on that the issue with that?
Basically, Matchbox had the Robotech license for all of the toys, but when Transformers was being made, because of a cross licensing on the design of the Veritech fighter at the time, they created the Jetfire, first aerial Autobot Jetfire, and when that figure came out, it was a Veritech fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And it came with all the heavy armor pieces and everything, and basically it killed any sales for other Robotech Veritech fighters, because the design on Jetfire was a lot more streamlined and a lot better looking. And I think that toy alone killed a lot of the Robotech franchise.
But it also is the Transformers line. The Transformers line was crushing it when it came out. You know, I mean, aside from maybe picking up maybe Leader One from the GoBots, because I thought Leader One was awesome. But no, I mean, you're right. And you wanted to be a completist with the Transformers line. So
yeah. What about you, Alan, with the toys over in your market?
Sorry, guys, lost you there for a second. Is it still there?
Yeah. Was asking you, what was it like with the toy line over in the Australian market?
Mattel was probably the big one at the time that was killing it with, you know, obviously He-Man and stuff. So when Matchbox brought out the first line of Robotech toys, it really, I think, changed the market a little bit. Main thing was with those guys, when they brought that out, we've got obviously Transformers were probably at their peak at the time. So Matchbox really had an uphill battle. And then you had obviously the, I think it was the jumbo-sized Veritech fighter and vice versa. But a lot of us out here really didn't care for the quality of a lot of those Robotech toys. So what we did was we started to get the original Macross line, the original Southern Cross and Mespeeda lines. And part of our collections out here now, and particularly part of the RPG teams we're still part of, are from the original anime. That way you get a Veritech fighter that is legit, you know, the exact dimensions that you need scale-wise. Because that's one thing with the series that Harmony Gold's, I suppose, merchandising, they never quite got the accuracy right. And I think, with, like you mentioned, the scales earlier weren't quite to what we need.
Yeah, I think Matchbox getting that license was weird in the first place. Because, I mean, here you're talking about basically a toy car company, and all of a sudden now they're doing this. And I can just remember the ones that come to mind were when Matchbox put out the Cyclone figures. Very cool design, but the figures were so cheap. They would just fall apart on you immediately.
Yeah, they did not hold their transformation at all. You know, like the wheels on the backside were sliding down all the time.
Weren't they also difficult to pull out of the initial packaging, too? You had to be careful with that.
Yeah, I believe so. Because they came in
originally as the Cyclone with the Rider, and the Cyclone would break into pieces as soon as you tried to pull it out of the packaging.
Yeah. Yep. Great look, terrible manufacturing. So.
I think we've all learned from that with these franchises that, you know, if you give it to the right company that's going to respect it, then you'll get something of quality. And I find that a lot of the Japanese companies over the years, when it comes to Gundam and other anime, they really do respect it. And that's why a lot of the Mespeda lines of Mecha have been the ones that have been sought after, and particularly with my collection of Mecha stuff, you know, the Legios or the Alpha and Beta is probably one of the prized possessions when it comes to Mecha anime.
Yeah. Now, I will say here, in about the last 15 years, there is a company that's put out the Robotech Masterpiece Collection, and those figures are beautiful and amazingly well done. They're not cheap. In fact, I believe the Scott Bernard Cyclone Masterpiece right now on eBay goes for easily $500.
Wow.
Yeah. They're not cheap at all. But the quality, like you say, is right there. And, I mean, right down to the nuts and bolts, it really is a class act. I remember, you know, when Harmony Gold started really pushing the DVDs back in early 2000, we got those little micro Veritex and stuff like that. I mean, look, fans don't want that. We want proper scaled Veritex, you know, no mucking around. Get the licenses organized. Give us something that we want, because then you'll back it all the way. And I think... I'm going to say it here. Harmony Gold, you know, over the years have dropped the ball. They're not willing to go 100 mile an hour with, I mean, even Robotech Legacy and stuff like that that was going to come out a few years ago. They said, Kickstarter, that's right, we won't back it. And I think what I would like to have seen is them have the courage to really give, you know, a little bit of grounding to a beautiful series. And I know that the people behind there have it in their hearts to do it right. And I think, you know, Tommy Yen and the rest of the team, I know, are going to one day give us something amazing, because I know they're all very creative and very, very heartfelt behind this series.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the biggest, in closing for me, that's one of the biggest frustrations with the current status of Robotech, is that it feels like Harmony Gold is almost holding the fans hostage.
Yeah, and look, I know they mean well. They mean well. That's the thing about it. I think you're right too, Kyle, is that, you know, we've got a company there that obviously, you know, they've owned the rights since day dot. But I think the people behind there, you know, want to do it right by giving it the right budget as well. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the people who are there love it. But it's when you start talking about the upper management of Harmony Gold, I don't know why they're scared to pull the trigger on it, because if they put the proper budget into it, it's going to make them money. The market is too big out there. It just takes the one right investor. And it's a key of two things happening. One, Harmony Gold finally working with the Japanese market to bring the other Macross shows over.
Yeah.
And then,
agree.
And I think if you do that combined with a new Robotech series, you would have such a rebirth of both of those properties in the United States, it would be amazing, and internationally, it would be amazing.
It would sell itself. I think that's the key, is that, you know, that's what this was always, was an adaptation. And I think that's what maybe what they've lost in the last couple, is that it was born out of adapting, you know, three series. Well, why don't adapt other series? I know a lot of purists won't like it, but Robotech fans will love it.
Yeah, and even if you, I think we're even at a point where, we saw it with Shadow Chronicles. If you do something original, but you still stay true to the source material, people are going to eat it up. I think with Shadow Chronicles, one, I always felt Shadow Chronicles was a little bit poorly marketed. And two, I think that if they would have had more done before they released this original film, it would have caught on even more. But they did this original film, and they had a great idea of where to take it. But for whatever reason, yet again, Harmony Gold just refused, didn't see the profit in it. And I just don't see it. I don't see how they don't see the profit in it.
I agree, and I think that's therein lies the problem. And you got to have faith in your material and have the courage to you know, put it all on the wall and just see if it is going to stay.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, It's been a blast talking Robotech with you. Do you guys have any final thoughts for us before we all go our ways in search of more protoculture before the next episode?
Yeah, I wanted to actually just briefly bring up the comics, which is one of the things that captured my attention about Robotech. As I was watching the TV series, Comico was releasing the comics, and the comics basically were a paper version of these episodes. They didn't really deviate much at all, but they were beautifully done, great covers, great animation or great drawings in there, and it was really, really nice to kind of actually hold these in your hand and read along, because even though the stories were taken directly from the U.S. released versions of the Macross Saga, the Masters, and the Next Generation, there's still some great panels in there that you may not have seen in the TV series. And I wanted to, you know, bring that up because as I had mentioned back in the Fandom Flashback for G.I. Joe, my complete collection of the Comico Robotech series survived my dad's garage fire, and I was very happy about that. Now, did you guys pick up any of those comics? Did you guys read those?
I had a few scattered ones growing up, but I've read most of the collection. What I had was a lot of the later Robotech stuff, which was news stories when here in the U.S., Antarctic Press had the rights to Robotech for the comic licensing. And since we're talking about that, too, there was a little piece of news about 2 weeks ago that a new comic company called Titan Comics has just acquired the Robotech comic book license here in the States.
Mm. That's right.
And Wildstorm as well did a great job a couple of years ago as well, pumping out some very, very well-detailed art as well.
Yeah, that was right towards the end of the Wildstorm run before they got bought by DC, and that was one of the sadder things that happened with that was just as it felt like Wildstorm was getting a really good grasp on that license, they got bought by DC, and that license just basically got thrown to the wayside.
The pattern that's evolving here, it sounds like that Robotech fans are always kind of like that, a day late, dollar short, almost, and it doesn't seem so fair to them. You know?
Yeah, I
would say that is since the end of the original Robotech series, I think that's a very fair assessment, Norman. It just seems like we get just a taste of something new, and just as it seems like it's starting to pick up some momentum, they pull the plug on it.
Yeah.
And just a quick personal observation, as we were recording this podcast, I decided to throw in the first disc of Macross Saga and have it playing with no sound in the background. And there is actually a big resemblance between the helmets that Rick Foker and and Roy wear that look a lot like the Star Wars Resistant pilot helmets. I think someone was probably inspired by Robotech when they were building those.
Very true. Very true.
So, Norman, do you have any final thoughts for us from your experience with Robotech?
Yeah, I think Robotech is actually a really fantastic property. I remember, it's obviously been really important to all of us in some fashion or another. And between the two of you, Alan and Kyle, it's obviously taken like really deep hold. I think that's a testament to how strong the storytelling was and how it's just influenced us in some way. And it stands the test of time. Not a lot of properties do. I mean, you know, we talked about a lot of things here. We talked about Star Blazers. We talked about Battle of the Planets. Or we never actually mentioned Gundam, which I think that's actually is part of this whole animation surge, but I agree with you, Kyle. There's something about Robotech that hasn't quite pushed through. I don't know what it is, but I think it's a shame that it hasn't been given its due. I mean, seeing things like, you know, the Transformers movies and Pacific Rim, you would think that the tendency would go more towards seeing test footage of seeing a Veritech transform. Right, because that would be bonkers. So I'm looking forward to the further shows because there are some of the things in the license that I was a little bit more involved with and growing up, you know, especially collecting a lot of the toys because much to my parents' wallet's chagrin, that happened. So,
Alan, what about you? Any final thoughts for us before we let you go off on your way?
I have very, very, very honorable thoughts towards my dear friends here. And, of course, to the Robotech fans out there about a series that's very near and dear to us. Today we say thanks for having us on the show and talking about one of the most near and dear songs to our heart. That is Robotech, the series that started us off with anime here in Australia. And to you, Norman, joining part into Connery and Kane, one of the great shows out there. Talk about when it comes to everything is just looking at what those two would do involved in that series. And to Kevin for inviting us on again. Mate, you're a good pal, and all three of you are brothers in the Force. I want to thank you for having us on. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks for, yeah, man. Thanks for being on, man. It's always a pleasure.
And Alan will be back with some of his Australian buddies as we dive into the RPG, the novels, and some of the other miscellaneous Robotech things here in a future episode of the Flashback on Robotech. So we're not done with you yet, Mr. Allen.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, see you, bub.
Well, guys, we spent the last hour talking about an anime that was absolutely huge to me, and I know you guys had a soft spot in your heart for it, but, you know, it's so nice to see such a good property does still get recognized even now. And I hope someday we can get Robotech back to where it was and where it could be. Kind of like what you guys had done with Highlander. I think if it was just going to take the right spark and the right people, and I think Robotech could be brought back and become a big thing in our culture again.
I have one last question about that, and maybe both of you guys can answer that, but in the fandom, you know, the fandom that the fans that have been following this, you know, from decade to decade, you know, tooth and nail, what do they want for this property? Where do they want it to be in the end?
Well, I think right now, one of the big things that has always been kind of the lingering, hanging plot line is what really happened with Rick Hunter and the SDF-3 at the time. Yes, there was some coverage of the Sentinels novel in the Sentinels novels, but there was never really any closure on the Rick Hunter story.
So is he hanging out there like Skywalker?
Basically, yeah.
Well, I wanted to touch on something real quick that you said, Norm. You said that, and I think I might have a solution or an idea. You mentioned that Robotech just quite hasn't gotten its due yet, and you ask, what is it going to take? And I think the reason why it hasn't gotten its due, and maybe because it's mired in all of this legal mumbo jumbo or whatever, but Transformers got movies, Highlander got movies. You either need a live action movie translated that might help, or another reinvention of it to really kind of get it out there again. That's why it hasn't gotten its due. It's stalled.
Like back in the public consciousness, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was cruising down the highway, and then boom, it just stalled. And there's little speed bumps here and there of why it did, and the transmission just kind of conked out. And I think you're right, though. It needs its due, and I think it needs a reinvention. And I would love to see a live action movie done with this, because the technology's there, the actors are out there. The love for it and the property, but where it stands on a legal point, don't know where that is.
Well, let me devil's advocate that, because I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right that when you give something, an older property, a modern shot in the arm, it really does help. But did you think that that was the case for Transformers and G.I. Joe? Because I don't really see those properties getting that big of a shot in the arm because of the movies came out.
Oh, I think it did. I think it did, especially when it came to toys. And you know, say what you want about the, you know, whether you like Michael Bay or not, the movies did extremely well financially. It got it out there. It sold more toys. It got new fans into it. And, you know, the effects were good and it was, you know, action and fun. But yeah, it Transformers definitely got its due. When it came to G.I. Joe, that can be debatable, but it was done. You got some decent characters in there. In my opinion, they were fun to watch. But yeah, those properties did get their due. They did get their spotlight. Depending on how long it stays in the spotlight, that's another question. More time will tell.
That's a fair point, because sometimes in conversations, I don't really hear anyone going like, wow, man, you remember that G.I. Joe movie? That was baller. You know, but I don't. I'm not saying.
But those movies are sitting on people's, you know, movie shelves right now. That is a step. Yeah, that's a step that took, you know, that engine kept running. Robotech is not.
You know, I mean, I definitely I would love to see Robotech on the shelf for sure. You know, but it's weird. Like, you see a Pacific Rim out there and I'm like, man, Veritech's fighting. Come on.
Well, yeah.
I think what we're seeing too is in the entertainment reality we are now with Robotech. I think you'd even go at this point with a Netflix type show with it. Really, really tell it out, because there's, or at least certain aspects of Robotech. I mean, you could take the new generation, and to me, that screams a TV show. You talk about the Walking Dead type aspect of survivors on the run. And you take those cyclone mechs, which I think would actually translate very well to television. I think that's an arc of Robotech that could easily, you could see on Netflix or on TV, where possible, like with the Macross saga, that would be more for the big screen.
And, you know, and I totally agree. I think that if you do it right, you don't have to like hang your hat on having a mech like transform every single second of every single scene. The investment here, as we said earlier on in this show, is in the characters and the writing, not necessarily the effects.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, there has been talk of a live action Robotech movie that for a long time. Tobey Maguire was attached, and there was even talk of he actually had some of the rights he had purchased. But again, it's just completely stalled out. And I think that's kind of the sad history of Robotech, is that it seems like it's a franchise that's always going to stall out in the end.
Mm. And pity.
I just think with until something really shakes up the licensing of it, that's how it's going to be. And it is a shame, because I think Carl Masek got lightning in a bottle with the original series and being able to be so successful with taking those three separate shows and merging them together. And like I said, we've never really seen anything else like that to this day. So it's just possible Robotech was that. It was lightning in a bottle, and it just can't be recreated. But, you know, I hope someday we see something done that sticks with this franchise, because it's too rich of a franchise to be sitting on the shelf.
I agree with that. Yeah. It's I would just love to see that drama in live action. You know, when I look at these awesome animes on this DVD collection, that's my favorite part. You know, there has to be the battle every like, you know, 5-10 minutes or so, and it's fun, but I love the drama. I love the personal stories. They're great.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for being part of this flashback with me. Like I said, this is a passion of love for me when it comes to anime, and especially Robotech. And I want to thank Alan for jumping in from across the pond. And Kevin and Norman, you let me tag along with you guys on Highlander, and I'm just honored to have you guys here with me to talk Robotech.
I'm sorry, Kevin. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, anytime. I love this. I was happy to be on. Thanks for asking us on it. It's been great.
Yeah, and I love being able to come on and learn something. I've learned a lot, actually, just listening to you and Kevin and Alan. It's nice to come in kind of like not knowing everything, and now I'm actually excited to throw in those DVDs and watch them again, because it's been a while.
Well, Well, and I think we agreed when we discussed Highlander, that was one of the big hopes of the Phantom Flashback, was to get people to kind of stop, pick up of their old DVD of whatever we're covering in the flashback at that time, and just refresh themselves with it and go back and enjoy something they loved at some point.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. So, again, I want to thank everybody for listening. There's more coming with Robotech. We're gonna have some fun with this. Alan will be back, as I've said. Kevin and Norman will be popping along the rest of this ride as well. So the flashback has just begun, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So thanks again, everybody, and have a good night. Let's just